So, hello, I'm Luke Ferrone, and I'm a software engineer on the infrastructure security team at Dropbox. I'm one of the maintainers of Meru, our internal user management system, and yes, I did color coordinate my belt and my hair today. But first, a word from our lawyers. Any systems or processes described herein do not per se describe any current or past practices at Dropbox. They're intended just purely for educational purposes. Any resemblance to any real persons, living or dead, or auditors, is purely coincidental. So, first, what is it? Meru is primarily an authorization service. It has a profile for every employee in your organization, along with some associated metadata and group memberships. So it'll store, like, say, a user's public key or their preferred shell. Meru is open source software. We do most of our development work on GitHub and run the same code that we publish. Meru is also a decentralized system. We've worked very hard to take the security team out of the critical path of most requests, instead preferring a more democratized approach. Finally, Meru is audited. We try to make it clear who did what, when, and provide mechanisms to support additional internal audit workflows as needed. But before you go forward, I just wanted to note that the original internal name of this service was Grouper, and it wasn't until one of our interns was looking help for using it, and since it was an open source project, did a Google search, and was quickly very confused. Great minds think alike, and it turns out that the fine folks at Internet 2 already have a software project called Grouper that serves the same space, so we renamed it not too long ago, after a lot of bike shedding. So sorry in advance if I slip up, if I say Grouper when I mean Meru. Then, yeah, don't worry about it. With that out of the way, why did we build this? We built Meru to encourage granularity, to make it easy to create a group and get permissions assigned to it. We feel that if our software is usable and easy to use, then it increases the likelihood that people will only request the access they actually need. A higher barrier to entry would encourage people to over-request access. If it's a lot of work to obtain it or takes a long time, they're more likely to ask for SSH access to star. We built Meru to be scalable, to avoid requiring round trips to an overworked IT or security team for most tasks. We built Meru for visibility. It keeps track of what resources membership grants access to. From a user's point of view, this makes it easy for a user to understand at a glance, just by looking at their Meru profile, what they have the permission to do, which allows them to resolve most issues on their own. And for the security team, it gives us one place to see the scope of an employee's access and production, as well as all people who have any type of access. This allows us to easily track key performance indicators to tighten access as needed, or perform other internal audits. But to be honest, one of the secondary drivers was compliance. If you're a SaaS company, and one of the main things purchasers are going to ask, for better or worse, is questions like, are you compliant with ISO 27001? Will you sign a HIPAA BAA so we can put our healthcare data in your service? Can we use your software to store credit cards? The answer to that is no, by the way. Can we do classified processing? Also no. And one of the main things that almost every compliance regime is going to care about is, when you're small, you probably just do the same thing for every engineer that joins your organization. But once you reach a certain size, you start needing to be a bit more granular. Auditors generally don't like hearing, we just like trust our engineers to do anything anywhere. They probably won't screw up. And this is actually really important for a bunch of reasons, because not only would you worry about malice, but you also would worry about people just simply messing around where they shouldn't be. You know, some intern running amok in production is always a terrifying thought. And so you resign yourself to implementing some level of process, but you don't really want to do more than you need to. And so in the beginning, you might start out with something simple and lightweight, a Google form, perhaps. That'll feed into a spreadsheet. And if you're really fancy, you might even have it send an approver an email letting them know that they have to go process some request. You'll keep access to this spreadsheet tightly restricted at first. Maybe the manager of your SRE team and, for separation of duties, an engineer who will action requests once approved. Auditors tend to want some assurance that if David submitted a permission request, he can't go into our form and mark it as approved by his manager. This system might work well when you're 50 people, but fundamentally, you'll come to reach the limitations of your platform. A spreadsheet is hard to manage and not really well-suited for processing timely requests. People might make mistakes, fail to mark something as approved, or fail to mark something as actioned. You've also introduced a bit of a blocker to productivity. What happens when your head of SRE wants to get some of that Indonesian sun, or your actioner decides they really need a break from it all? It's also a workflow that's very heavy on manual effort. There's a limited ability to automate common tasks, and nobody really likes being a human shell script. When you have one record system that logs access requests and a plethora of unrelated systems that actually control access, you end up acquiring a lot of diligence on the part of the actioner, and mistakes can be really hard to spot. Finally, your access approval spreadsheet only measures points in time. In a fast-growing company, folks move around all the time between roles and organizations. Today, maybe an SRE, tomorrow you're in security, the day after you're owning the core web platform. It can get hard to manage all of that and still ensure your source of truth is consistent with reality, what really matters, which is to say, your configs. And so we found ourselves at a fork in the road, at the corner of Build and Buy Avenue. Should we implement some existing system, like LDAP or Internet 2's grouper? Or should we build something that meets our needs and business processes? That sounds like a lot of effort. And fundamentally, building a better internal authorization system doesn't really help us keep the lights on. So circa about 2012 or 2010 or so, we decided to iterate on our spreadsheet. And the result was a tool we called Flankit. It looked and felt very similar to ye merry old Google Sheets in terms of its process, but it had a little web UI that could keep track of actions and approvals in a more consistent manner. To be honest, it was basically a glorified spreadsheet slash form generator. It did have the benefit of being backed by a database, so we could maybe automate some things. But at the end of the day, Flankit also had a freeform text field of Doom called Other. And you could put whatever you want in there. And there was not necessarily a great way to track that once it was approved. But still, this was still better. We at least could easily pull whatever reports we needed and perhaps do the basics of automation. And as a result, it was slightly more amenable to enforcing reality. However, Flankit still had its problems. For example, everyone on SRE probably wants the same basic set of access to start out with. Teams started maintaining detailed documentation in multiple different places, as often happens with docs, saying, oh yeah, when you join this team, request access to this, 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 and oh, click other and type in this, copy and paste this text. So we decided to add templates that would let you say, oh, I'm a member of SRE, and then add some additional things that you needed access to, or I work in data center operations. But any change to our templated permissions meant that users would have to resubmit access requests. Flankit, unfortunately, didn't bring us close enough to our goal of keeping compliance and approval in check with reality. So once again, back to the fork in the river. We didn't really have a lot of time to build this sort of thing. Keeping the site running was one of our top priorities around 2014. But fortunately, one of our SREs had a baby and went on paternity leave. And as any new parent knows, babies in sleep are not necessarily compatible. So in a fit of rage between newborn tasks, he wrote an initial version of Maru. It was built with the intention of being a lightweight, standalone service that would have touch points with other existing systems as needed. Maru encompasses four key components, the user, the group, the permission, and the service account, which we'll talk about later. And now, time for a live demo. One second. Sorry, just setting something up.
There we go.
Cool. Perfect. So this is a user's page in Maru. It's fairly straightforward. Users are members of groups. Via their group membership, they're assigned permissions suitable for the roles represented by that group. So for example, if I was a new engineer on the storage SRE team, I might start by joining the storage team Maru group. Is this keyboard in Japanese? Cool. So what just happened was a request was sent to the owners of that group. And an approver can go in and approve it. And so now I'm a member of that group. And when I go back to my user page, I now see that I'm a member of that group and I'm able to see those new permissions on my user homepage. A permission grant to a group is of the form permission argument. Permission creation is performed in the grouper UI, but arguments are free form and identify the specific resource that the permission is operating on. Groups can also be a part of another group, thus inheriting the permissions of that other group. For example, folks working on the storage SRE team should be able to modify storage systems. For example, they have SSH access to Magic Pocket hosts, for example, or have the ability to modify the code for storage. But because they're also an SRE, they're a member of the SRE group, and have the ability to do a certain set of permissions that every other SRE should be able to do. This is kind of similar to what you might have seen from systems like LDAP. Except we allow multiple inheritance. Grouper doesn't enforce a strict hierarchy. Users can be in multiple groups. Groups can be in multiple groups. Groups can't be in multiple users. It doesn't work that way. But most of this is fairly standard. Maru's real power is in its democratic nature. Maru tries to take the global approvers, be it your head of SRE, your security team, or IT, out of the critical path as much as possible. We do this by making it easy to devolve approval power to team leads and service owners. We've already shown that group owners have the ability to manage their own groups and thus the permissions associated with those groups. But how do groups get permissions? Well, anyone can create a group since groups start out with no default access. Permissions are assigned to a group either by the security team or your global approvers, or by permission granters, which is defined, of course, with a permission. We provide a mechanism in Meru to make permission requests. There's a little request permission button. And let's say my SREcon attendees group is trying to collaborate with the paper team, and they want to be able to have access to the paper team's staging cluster. As you can see in the Meru UI, there are two sets of groups that have the ability to approve that new permission, global approvers and paper SRE. When the request is submitted, it shows up as pending in this way and sends an email to the appropriate team. That's implemented via a sort of granted to the paper SRE group. In this case, it's called grouper permission grant. We also support routing permission requests via plugins. So if you say, want to allow a team that owns a set of boxes to be able to approve requests to access those boxes, you could write custom Python code and very, very easily just load that into Grouper to Meru when it starts. Live demo over. So we've gone over distributed management of groups, permissions, and permission grants. And we've reduced the cost of keeping the lights on we've reduced the keeping the lights on costs of centralized access control by delegating that authority to group owners and permission granters. But when the auditors come knocking at the end of the quarter, what do you show them? Meru, of course, keeps an audit log, a record of all activity everywhere in the system. In the interest of transparency, there's a listing of recent activity on each object in Meru. That answers the question we discussed at the beginning of our talk, but leaves other questions unanswered. Meru answers this question through distributed auditing. What that means in practice, permissions can be marked as audited, which means that groups with that permission become subject to audits and become audited groups. A group being audited also means that the owners of those groups need to go through some sort of audit training. It essentially boils down to the old cliche, with great power comes great responsibility and some boring responsibilities too, specifically quarterly access review. Once a quarter, a member of our compliance team will kick off a global Meru audit that affects all groups subject to auditing. Every owner of an audited group gets an email, and the next time they visit their group's page, they're asked to confirm their group membership for appropriateness. We also provide an eye in the sky view for our compliance team. Now, whenever you're working on a new software project, it's great. You don't have any legacy code, you say you're going to avoid bloat, but then you need to touch one system and another system, add features for everything you want to push data to. That's not really scalable. So instead, we decided to keep the core of Meru simple and provide a read-only API for consumption by third-party integrations, which often were written by first-party developers, AKA me or my colleagues. We provided a REST API that queries backends with a read-only database, and also provide data exports when reliability is a concern, written out either in a standard JSON format or via a custom format if needed for that third-party software. We run most of our data exports or syncing integrations on a cron. We're pretty comfortable with trading high availability for timeliness and have other mechanisms in place to quickly revoke access if needed. Just as a recap before we dive in, permissions in Meru have two alphanumeric string components. There's the permission name and then the arguments. Integrations are mostly focused on the arguments or and a subset of the permissions. Let's dive into one specific integration we built at Dropbox, our AWS IAM integration. I'm out of time. Okay, great.